Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 70. And it is playoff week for the Steelers as we get through the wild card round, Dave. And we've got the matchup. It will be the Jacksonville Jaguars coming back to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers at Heinz Field at 1 o'clock Sunday. And after watching that game, watching the games over the weekend, I don't know that anybody's going to be overly scared about the Jacksonville offense. It's obviously an incredibly good defense, but this is a game where the Steelers are going to be favorites. And, it should be a win on Sunday, right?
Well, we said the same thing back in the middle of October. what were they favored by?
I think it was nine. I meant to go back and look at that, and I remember thinking about it and just having the same feeling that I have this week, that it's a not good offense. I think they're a 9-point favorite.
Yeah, and if you go back and relive that game, that Week 5 game, the Steelers, the Jaguars had 27 putos in that game. 27, of course, obviously 13 of those came via back-to-back pick sixes by Ben Roethlisberger. But people forget that they had 14 other points that they scored off of turnovers as well too. Now, obviously, the final Jaguars touchdown, the long run by Leonard Fournette. Really, you could just toss that one out the window, I think, on for several reasons, because the game was really already in hand at that point. And while that was considered points off of turnovers as well, too, they've got the ball deep in their own end there off of an interception, off of a Roethlisberger interception. And as I said, the game was effectively over at that point. When you go back, though, and you kind of relive what happened in the first half up until Roethlisberger's first pick six, the Steelers didn't, the Steelers offense had a few struggles there, only managing a couple of field goals in there. But the defense, I thought, played relatively well. They obviously even had the interception. Remember the interception by Ryan Shazier early in that game, and I think they turned that into a field goal as well. But once the wheels started coming off in that game, i.e. the first Roethlisberger pick six, they really started coming off, and the Steelers had effectively no answer at that point. It just all kind of snowballed from there. And how many times do we need to recap the Blake Bortles completed just 8 passes in that game, and I think he attempted 14 or something in that game. As well, Leonard Fournette, ran decent in the game, but you go back and look at his successful runs, they weren't extremely high. He did have a couple of nice runs in that game, but let's not forget that this game between the rematch between the Jaguars and the Steelers is going to take place in totally different circumstances. A, it's the playoffs. B, Bortles coming off of his first playoff game where he rushed for more yards than he threw for, and kind of B, C, D, if you will. It's supposed to be, I think, 20 degrees or thereabouts in Pittsburgh on Sunday, David, and that should mark the coldest game that Blake Bortles has ever played in, and for Leonard Fournette as well. And if you go back and read a few quotes from Leonard Fournette prior to the game against the Cleveland Browns, what was that, week 12 or week 13, right around in there, he said he absolutely hates playing in cold cold weather. Likes nothing to do with it. So if you're a Steelers fan, the colder the better, I think, in this game. And as you mentioned, if anybody watched that game against the Bills, and let's face it, the Bills, outside of Tre'Davious White and, you know, another player or two, their defense is not that imposing, if you ask me. They had problems moving the ball against them. I'm going to go out on a limb here, David, and predict that the Jaguars will not have 27 points off of turnovers in this rematch.
Yeah, I mean, just reminding people about that game, it's the Steelers moved on the early to their first drive and went up 3-0. It was 7-6. The Steelers were down at halftime. And the Steelers got a drive to open an extended drive, I think, to open the third quarter, and went up 9-7. I'll tell you that was, you know, I was at that game. It was one of the most boring football games you could go to. I mean, it was 9-7 midway through the third quarter. There wasn't any energy in the stadium. It was a nice fall day, but it was kind of overcast and gloomy. It was just and it was a game I think most Steeler fans and obviously Vegas expected the Steelers to kind of win comfortably. We knew the Jags were a good defensive team at that point, but maybe not quite as elite as they're perceived to be now, and knew that they were a team that, you know, the only way they were going to move the football was running the football. But knowing all those things, the Steelers didn't get it done. And I don't know that any of those things are different coming into this game. It's a Jags team that was able to win the game largely behind the legs of Blake Bortles and a really good defensive effort and a not particularly good effort by the Bills offensively. We saw the reason that Sean McDermott decided during the course of the season to bench Tyrod Taylor in favor of Nate Peterman. It was exactly the reason in that game. There were opportunities for Taylor to, if he had hit some passes, a seam route to Jack Nicklaus's kid, O'Leary, in the first half, in the end zone where he was open. There was a long pass late in the game where he overthrew a guy. He just missed, and the receivers didn't do him any favors either. But this was a game where a competent offense could have put up more points and probably come away with a victory because the Jacksonville offense itself was so fleeping bad. So it was, this is a game where everybody expects the Steelers to turn things around and make plays offensively and to contain the Jags. And it will be, Dave, I think it's very simple going into this game in terms of how we think about the Steelers season. And we mentioned it at the beginning. The Steelers season, if they lose in the AFC Championship game, will be seen as, kind of same old Steelers. That's what we expected. It's not a bad season, but it's not a good season because you lost in the AFC Championship game, presumably to the Patriots. Obviously, if they win the AFC Championship and go to the Super Bowl, it'll be an excellent season, and it'll be, fantastic if they win the Super Bowl. If they lose this game, the whole regular season is for naught. If they go in and lose a home playoff game in the first round, as nice as it is to be 13-3, Dave, I think you'd call the season a disappointment, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can bet the Yinzers will as well. And as much as we've told them all year, look, let's not look ahead to the Patriots game. Let's not look ahead to the Patriots game. Well, the Patriots game came and went, and they played. I mean, let's face it, that was a game. That was a game that they coulda, shoulda, woulda. But didn't win, okay? But we know that they can play with them. And obviously, since the AFC Championship last game, all the talk has been that the Steelers have to do whatever it takes to be able to win a AFC Championship rematch with the Patriots. And we are now one weekend away from the whole thing that the whole fan base has been pointing to since last year's AFC Championship game from happening. So absolutely, if they lose this game to the Jaguars, it becomes, the whole season really gets swept underneath the carpet and then out the door, if you will. So, they absolutely have to win this game for several reasons.
And, you know, the other thing about this game is when you go back, you wonder how quickly the Steelers got away from the run game. They only carried look, at some point, even at the end of the third quarter, the game's 20-9, and the last touchdown of the game, as Dave pointed out, Fournette's 90-yard run, which, by the way, was the fastest that a player with the football ran this season in the NFL in terms of top speed, about 22 miles an hour, Leonard Fournette on that run. He, in fact, had the two fastest runs over the course of the season. He accelerated to a top speed in the NFL during that 90-yard run. Le'Veon Bell only carried it 15 times, and the Steelers only ran the ball 20 times. And there's definitely a sense in that game that the Steelers got away from pounding the ball against the Jaguars, and then they got behind. And, of course, the difficulties have been spelled out. For Fournette, for his part, he didn't necessarily run the ball that effectively. He ran 27 other carries for 91 yards. So he was only getting 3 yards a carry. Chris Ivory had a couple decent runs. And Bortles only ran one time. I'm sure that will be something that the Steelers in this game will now be very cognizant of. I don't expect them to come out and play a heavy dose of man-to-man, but I do expect them to load the box and now be very concerned about keeping Bortles in the pocket. I don't think people, you know, perceive of Bortles as being a particularly mobile, fast quarterback, but he's got good, you know, he's got good legs. He read the situation and he did a really good job. I mean, for all the criticism, you know, we're going to lay on the Jags offense, Bortles did a really good job running the football in that game. He did what he needed to do. So give him credit there, but it's not, I mean, you look at this offense, Dave, and Fournette's got the pedigree of a high draft choice, but you know, name the receivers. It's a little bit like we were talking about Carolina. You know, people know who Mercedes Lewis is as a tight end, but no, people don't know, you know, this is not, you know, as much as I like Marquise Lee, you know, the receivers are basically just guys, a bunch of number two, number three types of receivers. And you know, the Steelers should shut this offense down. And my concern, even during the game, was like I was all of a sudden maybe more concerned about what Marcus Mariota and the Titans might do against the Steelers than what Blake Bortles and this offense of the Jags might do.
Well, when you look at how Bortles was able to use his legs in that playoff game against the Bills, and then you kind of marry that to a couple times this season that the Steelers have allowed quarterbacks to. And look, I mean, was the Steelers defense trying to just do whatever they could to get kind of that sack record against Kaiser? And, you know, how much gap integrity, you know, and quarterback spying and all like that went out the window because of maybe them trying to chase a sack record or whatnot? You know, did they get away from some of the things that they were supposed to do when it came to containment on Kaiser? We saw Kaiser just really gashed him quite a bit with his legs. You go back to that first game against the Jaguars. I'm hearing some echo there, David. Did you step away? Hello, hello.
Yeah, I don't know what the echoes headsets are.
Okay, all right, better there. But you go back to that first game against the Jaguars as well too. On what was it, a 3rd and 9 or a 2nd and 9, and Bortles escaped the pocket. I believe it was deep in a Jaguars' own end, and he converted a first down with his legs that way. So yeah, you know, containing Bortles. You got, and make no mistake about it, when it's, you know, 20 to 25 degrees at Heinz Field on Sunday, I don't think Blake Bortles is kind of looking forward to running with the football and getting popped once or twice. If he does take off with the football early, you pop him one good time, that might put an end to that real quick as well. You know, you talk about their wide receivers. Westbrook, not a guy that really right now puts a lot of fear in you. Marquise Lee, Cole has had a nice rookie season for him. Now, obviously, Hearns is a guy that can you know, do some things against you as well too. You talk about it, the tight end that they have in Mercedes Lewis, obviously, you know, can stretch you as well too. But once again, this is a quarterback in Blake Bortles who, what is he, 34-35% on deep passing this season. I think he only connected on one. I think he was 1-of-1 on deep passes in that game against the Bills yesterday. And you get into Heinz Field there in 20-degree weather with the wind kicking up a little bit there. I kind of doubt, unless he's forced to on second and third and long situations, that he's going to want to throw the football down the field. If you go back and you examine his throws against the Bills from yesterday, he sure looked like he was aiming the football a lot. You know, he didn't look like he was throwing. It looked like he was a nervous guy. And quite honest with you, it looked like the Jaguars coaching staff took the football out of his hands in some key situations in that game, almost as if to say, look, we don't want him to lose the game for us. We got a good enough defense that they can win this game. So it goes back to what you said a few minutes ago there. It's going to be very disappointing if this Steelers team allows the Jaguars team to come in there in the playoffs in Heinz Field in super cold weather and walk out of there with a win.
Yeah, interesting on the weather. It's supposed to get we've had a kind of 2 weeks of miserable cold weather here in western Pennsylvania with the high temperatures around 20. Today we've got a relative heat wave with temperatures in the mid-30s. It's supposed to go up to 55 on Thursday and then kind of plummet back down. Even on Saturday, it's supposed to be a high of 42. But on Sunday, at least what I'm seeing right now, high of 20 degrees, a low of 8 degrees. So yeah, it's not going to be fun temperatures for the Jags coming into Pittsburgh, and the Steelers will obviously look to have that be one of the advantages they have along with the home field. Dave, from an injury perspective here, we've seen videos or Instagrams put up by I think Ocho Cinco might have put some of them up himself, but it appears that Antonio Brown is well on his way to being at least pretty darn close to 100% for this game.
Boy, he certainly does, right? I mean, we went to, do you remember the progression here? One of the first videos.
It's shuffling in his driveway.
Yeah, trying to get up the stairs and trying to get up the driveway and letting out, and an expletive, if you will. And then, a few days later, the next time that we see him, he's on the, a zero gravity treadmill, where he's not, doesn't look like he has all the weight on him. And then lo and behold, next one we get is that, he's down there in South Florida with Chad Johnson, and he's running routes. I mean, he's getting off the ball and doesn't look like he has much of any kind of, limp or gait, to his step there. So, and that was yesterday or a day before, whenever it came out, and 1 week ahead of the Steelers playing the Jaguars. So now he's going to have another full week. It's hard to imagine him not practicing in some capacity starting as soon as today. You would think the Steelers are going to get out there and do something today. Probably, obviously have maybe Tuesday off as a normal week, and then of course Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, regular practices there. So I don't know what percentage he's going to be, but he certainly looks to be to be making a progress to be back to himself come game time.
And BJ Finney is, Mike Tomlin is going to have his press conference tomorrow. This is a little different than the way they do it during bye weeks during the regular season. So he did have one after the game, and he'll have one tomorrow. So most of the time, obviously, and that will be spent, previewing the Jags and answering the few questions that there will be. I don't imagine it will be an extended press conference. There's not that much to go over. So the Steelers, again, they're going to come into this game. Obviously, the injury to Ryan Shazier has been the one significant injury the Steelers suffered this season, but going to come into this game, it looks like, reasonably healthy.
Yeah, and we'll see what Tomlin has to say about B.J. Finney on Tuesday. Once again, of course, he is a backup there. There's one significant one that one seemingly significant one coming out of that game for the Jaguars on Sunday, and that's Paul Poloszny leaving that game with some sort of a hip injury. So, he never wanted to leave the game evidently, but he did, and I I don't think he returned after leaving. And boy, Tony Romo had some brilliant analysis on one of those plays. Was it the shady long run?
Yes, over the right side, or
yeah, and then Romo immediately points out the backup, the guy that had replaced Posluszny in the lineup there, and how late he was kind of getting over there. So that would appear to be the main injury right now for the Jaguars. To track, but look, even without them, their secondary and Ramsey and Bouye and Church, in the secondary there, they're going to be fine. Obviously, the Steelers' key to this game is something that they couldn't do effectively in that first game, and they're going to have to establish that run, I think, early with Le'Veon Bell. And the good news with Bell is he's now had a couple of weeks off of rest here, and Pouncey and DeCastro have had some time off there. This Steelers offensive line really should be rested and raring to go for Sunday there in Pittsburgh. So I would think that you come out just trying your best to establish the run. They should have both Jesse James and Vance McDonald at their disposal. And one thing that I want to see the Jaguars have to do in this game, David, is I want to see those guys on the edge have to play the run, and that's cornerbacks included. The Steelers have run their best this year outside of the guards, and I think that's something that they absolutely have to do in this game and early. If they're able to do that, establish this run, and get the Jaguars fully committing to the run, then that's going to hopefully open up some one-on-one situations to exploit down the field. And don't think that Todd Haley and the rest of that offense didn't see those couple. How many throws in that game from yesterday would you circle for Tyrod Taylor? 3, 4 that he probably should have made in that game?
The touchdown to O'Leary, the late, very late pass that they had a chance I don't know if he overthrew the receiver, or the receiver didn't lay out the way Thompson, I think it was. One or two others. I mean, I didn't think. Look, it's hard to say anything positive about Taylor's performance. They were able to move the ball in the first half. They get down to the one. The play calling was horrific. Some of the decisions they made. Benjamin was never a factor in this game. So yeah, Taylor just. It's not like you look at the game and look at each individual play and say it was horrific, but he didn't. You've got to make some big plays to beat a defense like that, and they had opportunities and they didn't do it.
Exactly. And I don't know how to break. We're going to break this down obviously a little bit more on Wednesday. I think we're going to try to have Ryan. What was his last name?
O'Halloran. Yeah. Ryan O'Halloran.
From Jacksonville.com. I think he was a great guest back in Week 5. So we'll get into this a little bit more. With him breaking it down. But I think it's pretty plain and simple. I'll be disappointed if they let Jacksonville score to more than 10 points. And if you hold Jacksonville, 16 points or less, there is no reason whatsoever that the Steelers shouldn't win this game.
Right. I think that's fair. That you'd like to keep this team under 20. You'd like to think the Steeler offense can put 20 up against anybody, and that should be enough to win the game. So, as Dave said, we'll get into this. There's it's a different week for us with the week off and just the one game to focus on in terms of, then now figuring out who the Steelers' opponent is. Let me ask you this question simply, Dave. Is after having watched them play another game, is your perception of Jacksonville any different than it was going into the game?
You mean the playoff game against?
Yeah, your perception of the Jags at noon yesterday versus your perception of the Jags right now. Is it any different? Did you learn anything about that team that you didn't expect by watching that game?
No, they got it. They got a great defense, and their offense is suspect. That's pretty much what we have known for quite a while, right?
Yeah. I just, to me, you know, it didn't tell us anything. It just, I think it, look, the, I don't know, maybe are the Steelers better off or worse off having lost to the Jags during the season? Who knows? We don't ever have a control group to study anything like that in the 100 million different parallel universes where the Steelers play the Jags and then play them again. We'll find the answer. The it's kind of interesting historical footnote to this game is the Jaguars are the only team that's ever beaten the Steelers twice at Heinz Field in the same season. And everybody knows that story as they came in and won a playoff game. What was that, Mike Tomlin's first year or second year, to whenever that was, 2007, I think.
It was January 2008, right? So
January, right, 2007 season, January 2008. So they'll have that opportunity again in this game. And again, you know, you hate to make it as black and white as this, but, you know, very simply, for the Steelers to have even considered what's even a passable season in the fan base's minds is you have to win these types of games. And I, you know, as interested as I was to see how the Chiefs kind of pursued in this, you know, went forward in this playoff series, because I thought if they went to New England, they'd give the Patriots a game. Their season, they won the AFC West, and their season has to go down as just a miserable failure to again lose a home playoff game and again lose it in the fashion that they lost it, up 21-3. And it doesn't matter that you went 11-5 or 10 or whatever they went to win the division and get to host the playoff game. You go lose a game like that, your season's a disaster. And for the Steelers, if they lose, you know, simply enough, and to the Steelers' credit, they have raised, you know, they have consistently been excellent and, you know, kept a level of excellence that keeps expectations up there. And if they lose this game to the Jags, it would be, you know, a disaster of a season.
No doubt.
All right, so let's do some other fun things here. We'll get to the four games that were played over the weekend. But as I mentioned on Friday, one of our listeners, Matt, was kind enough to go back and look at our early season predictions for, you know, what we thought was going to happen this season. And basically, the way we went through these is I was kind of tossing questions out at Dave, and generally the point of the question was, this is what I think, and I'll give you give me an over under on this number. And the number that I'm using is generally the number I think might be about what we're going to go for these. So, Dave, let's just go through some of these. And obviously, when you're doing this, it's a lot easier because the statistical analysis is much more defined for offensive players in terms of carries and yards and receptions and that type of stuff than it is for defensive players. So it skews to the offense and in no particular order. In that process of doing this, we'll kind of do our evaluation of how we think guys performed versus expectations over the course of the season. So, again, it's not really in any order, and thanks to Matt for putting this together. So, Dave, we started with Eli Rogers, and people who listen to the podcast know I've got a thing for Eli Rogers. I think he's a very elusive guy with the ball in his hands who, you know, his numbers were very solid last year, and I thought there was a chance for him to take a step forward. And I asked whether Eli would play 55% of the snaps this season, and your answer was barely, with Juju eating into his snap count, and you were definitely 100% on point with that one. He played, Eli Rogers played 35% of the snaps. Eli Rogers, obviously some overall disappointing numbers, right?
Well, I mean, look, Juju just got into his playing time, you know, quick. And once that happened, look, Eli Rogers has done some nice things, you know, during his career. But there, you know, it's just not consistent enough. I think at times he struggles to get off the line, in man coverage there. I mean, he's run some good routes during his brief career. Go back to that touchdown. What was it last season against the Bengals there? I'm not overly surprised with the decrease in snaps that he had this year. It's hard to get on the field right now at this point when you have AB and Juju and Martavis there. So, you know, the thing with him is, you know, how much longer will Eli, you know, be in Pittsburgh? I think he's going to be what, a restricted? I think he's going to be restricted this offseason. So I think they'll tender him, but, you know, they're probably not going to tender him anything higher than a I mean, are you going to tender him at a second round level? I don't think you can. I think you got to tender him at an original round level, and if he leaves, he leaves.
Nobody's signing Eli Rogers. He's a dime a dozen guy. Basically, I mean, again, there's zero chance he gets a second round tender, and there's zero chance anybody's going to go sign him as a restricted free agent. In my opinion, his final numbers on the regular season, for those who want to know, for a guy with about 50 catches last year, only 18 for $149. I know the fumble against the Bears on the kickoff on the punt return sticks in everybody's mind, but Eli Rogers is a more than capable punt return guy for the Steelers. Did some nice things against the Browns in that late game. We'll see if he's this is how he has an opportunity to impact this game this weekend in the punt return game. We'll see. You know, he's only been averaging a couple targets a game offensively, so not a big part of the passing game. He's a guy who I would say. My guess today would be he's a 60-40 guy, 70-30 guy in terms of being back next year. I don't think he's going anywhere else. I think he'll be in training camp. He'll probably make the team, but he's going to have to continue to be a punt returner in that role because, again, we'll see if Martavis Bryant's back, but the Steelers are going to continue to draft receivers, and that's just going to make it tougher for him.
And never say never with him getting a contract outside. I mean, look at Marcus Wheaton. I mean, would you have ever dreamed he would have got the deal that he got from the Bears?
Yeah, I think Wheaton had done, I think, more, a third-round pick who, he had that big game against Seattle, had done more. His issue was as much staying healthy, and again, that proved that again this year. But, he's going to get cut. That turned out, and, that's going to turn out to not be a good contract for the Bears. But, yeah, okay, we'll see. I'll be surprised if he's not back. Whether he's impactful, we'll see. Jesse, the tight end position was one of our offseason huge conversations. The little Darius Green caught us. The timing of that caught us both by surprise, as we didn't see the reason not to bring him to camp. Darius Green obviously ended his football career. As far as Dave, I never saw anything over the course of the season, right? He never signed with anybody, correct?
I think somebody brought him in for a visit or whatnot, but I think that was, he's not on I don't think he signed with anybody.
So we kind of get the general number down with Jesse James, and the question was, will he play 80% of the snaps? He ended up playing 82% of the snaps. The question for you, your answer was, roles will shift toward the end of the season in favor of Vance McDonald. I think that was pretty accurate. The problem, of course, was Vance McDonald staying on the field.
Right. I'm not seeing any answers for you in any of these boxes. Is that how you're successful? You just don't answer?
No, I was picking the number that I thought. So Jesse James, 80% of the snaps. So that was defining the catch.
Oh, so I was the only one with the ability to hang myself out to dry here. That's clever.
Well, you'll see as we go down here, that changes a little bit, but. You got to put the number in. So the answer, if I say Jesse James, 80% of the snaps, that means I think Jesse's going to play 80% of the snaps. What do you think, over or under? So Antonio Brown, stats for this one. This one I didn't go out there. This number got a little bit changed by Antonio being injured. But 100, you were at 125, 1,500. I think we were both kind of right on that number. Antonio Brown finishes 101 and 1533. All pro names came out this weekend. Antonio Brown, the only unanimous selection, pretty well deserved, and the highest honor you can pretty much get without being MVP of the league, right?
Boy, if he would have played in two and a half other games, right? I mean, he we're looking at 1,800 yards and maybe 125 catches or thereabouts. So, that probably wasn't an overly tough. I think the big thing was, would he finish under what he had last year? And I think we both are, I know I agree that it would probably be under that was a tough number to hit. The missing a couple games obviously skewed that.
You put his season, big gold star, right? As expected and elite, you expect, I mean, at some point here, he's going to drop off, but we haven't seen any of it.
No, we haven't seen any of that yet.
Okay, I said Martavis Bryant 70 to 80% of the snaps. You said 80 at least. He finishes 61.7. At the end of the day, why do you think we were both? Why do you think Martavis Bryant played fewer snaps than we both expected?
Juju, A. B. Martavis missed it. You know, the whole Martavis getting benched for a game didn't help his cause. And, you know, he wasn't effective early in the season on some of those deep throws. Yeah, he drew a pass interference call here or there. But, I mean, let's face it. Overall, this has been a disappointing season for Martavis Bryant. Sure, he's done a few nice things, you know, kind of later on in the season there. But, boy, the way this guy in his off-season training program and put on some weight and you know, really rededicating himself, you know, supposedly to the game and all, you have to view his season as a disappointment, I think.
Massive, yeah. Yeah. The question was 70 catches, 1,100 yards. You had just under. You had 68 catches for just under 1,000 yards. You were right to be under on both. You had 10 or 11 TDs. I had over 1,000 yards and 8 TDs. He ends up with 50 catches for just 600 yards and 3 TDs. So, yeah, well under expectations. And where would you put Martavis Bryant versus Mike Wallace during the end of his time with the Steelers? Not as good.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think back. You know, the thing with Mike Wallace was, you know, he was the one-trick pony. He was
productive, though.
He was productive, but he would double catch. You know, he was a body catcher. One thing, you know, one thing I don't think we see either of those two players do enough of is go up and get balls. And Martavis really should be able to do that more with his size and leaping ability. You know, some of the things that we saw him kind of be able to do at Clemson many moons ago. Geez. I mean, I tell you. Boy, Mike Wallace could still get. I mean, college open, couldn't he? I mean, have we seen Martavis really get college open this year? Deep down
no,
the field,
he's beating guys by a step or two. We've seen him kind of quit or get stopped on routes almost as often. It feels like on deep balls, Ben. We've seen that exasperated look from Ben that Martavis didn't finish. That's happened two or three times this year. I just, you know, for a guy, I mean, I would go back and I realize, you know, we never want to overemphasize things we see in the preseason, but I go back to that Buffalo game a couple of years ago when we knew he had the suspension, but he was out there and he just, I mean, it looked like a man playing against boys. And, you know, we've seen some of the elite things, you know, 2 years ago, but Martavis Bryant never did anything on the field this year where it made me think that he was a special wide receiver. You know, he made some plays, but there's nothing where he said, whereas I think in the past we've saw it a bunch of times where he said, my goodness, this guy is you know, there are times when I know it and I don't think I was, you know, I try not to be, as you say, hyperbole about guys. But, you know, the physical characteristics of Randy Moss, and that just looks silly now.
Well, he definitely runs like a gazelle still. I mean, when he can get off the line and get open or track a ball in the air and run up underneath it like he did, what was it, last game or the game before that, that he was able to do that. It's just not consistent enough. And there was hopes that he could kind of be the second, you know, look, to try to measure any player up to Randy Moss, you need some level of hyperbole, I think, but you thought that maybe he could become the best deep threat in the league, and that just hasn't materialized just yet. He's a talented player, David. He's still got the size and the speed. It's just,
and he's still young.
And he's still young. It's just, look, I mean. You know, obviously Mike Wallace shouldn't have been paid what he was paid by the Dolphins, but he was still able to do some things during that final season with the Steelers that, you know, that Martavis really is not doing and doing enough right now. Now we go and say that, is Martavis Bryant a guy that can really make an impact during the playoffs here? Certainly he is, but we need to see it.
Yeah, I need to see it, and it'll be interesting. Of the guys in situations. I think Martavis Bryant is probably, you know, Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant are clearly the two biggest offseason kind of question marks, how they're going to end up. Just a point of reference, as we're talking about Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace's career, season numbers this year, 52 catches, 748 yards, four touchdowns. Martavis Bryant, 50 catches, 603 yards, three touchdowns. Very similar numbers, a little bit higher yards per catch for Wallace. But similar numbers for the two receivers this year, just interestingly enough. Okay, Dave, so we went to Le'Veon Bell, and I'll just give you my thoughts before the season because I kind of remember talking about this. And when trying to gauge the number of touches Le'Veon Bell would get, and the way I looked at it was just very simply, 25 times 16. And whether he missed the last game of the season because the Steelers were going to be clinched, or we missed a game for injury, or just to use round numbers, it was an easy thing to do, and 400. And I know 400 raises off, you know, sets off alarm bells for the football cognoscenti when thinking, oh, you know, you're going to wear a guy out. And, you know, I just don't feel quite the same way as a lot of people do that, you know, a guy, if he carries it 400 times, he's going to be worn, you know, completely worn out during the season, because we know how many of those carries for Le'Veon Bell are going to be receptions. And then, you know, how often do you take a big hit in receptions and the like. So anyway, the numbers we threw out were 350 carries, 1,500 yards rushing, and then how many catches and touches. I went with 400 carries. You said, I hope not. He ended up at 406. And then, you know, the yardage, we were kind of both, we were, you know, on the mark roughly. 321 carries, 1,291 yards. We talked about him on Monday. How would you assess Le'Veon Bell's season?
All right, now, were we talking carries or touches?
Two different things. I mean, I think you had him at around, I think at the end of the day, you had him around 400, and I had him around 400. Or maybe you had him around 350, and I had him around 400. But just what he ends up with, what, 406. Do you feel like the Steelers overused Le'Veon Bell?
At some points there, I was hoping that they could have look, the way it ended up playing out in the final, you know, meaningful game against the Texans, and then, of course, holding him out against the Browns was ideal. I mean, that's absolutely ideal based on the amount of work. And I, you know, I guess that was what they were kind of betting for. But not knowing that's going to happen during the season, I started raising my eyebrows a little bit. Boy, you know, is it, you know, look, I don't think any of us thought coming in that James Conner was going to have, you know, 30% of snaps or whatever. But I, you know, there, to me, it's a bit of a disappointment that James Conner wasn't able to get himself in a position to maybe get a few more touches there. And I think the Jaguars game kind of did it in for him. That one missed pass protection that resulted in that pick, you know, in that pick six, I think really, you know, set James Conner back from maybe getting a few more touches. So, yeah, once again, I mean, it's not a huge deal, especially now that we know how it played out. And like I said, you know, able to get some rest in that game against the Texans, and then obviously not playing against the Browns to close out the season, and then yada, yada, a playoff bye from there. I mean, like we said earlier in the show, he should be ready to go there. My hope was, I think, at the time that you asked me that, was, you know, maybe a little less total work on him throughout the season.
Okay, and we discussed Bell on our thoughts on whether he'd be back on Monday. James Conner was the next one, and the over-under was 100 touches, which, you know, in the return game, we never saw James Conner, basically didn't see James Conner. Dave, you were around 50, 60, 70. I was around 100. Him not playing the last couple games obviously impacted things if he would have been the guy. But, you know, I think it's reflective. 32 touches before his injury. He was basically getting a touch or two a game, not much more than that. Was never really featured, never really got kind of extended runs. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell never got hurt. But I think when we saw him, you had to be impressed with the way he ran the football. Was James Conner underutilized by the Steelers, or is your point – they didn't get a chance because you couldn't take some risk?
Yeah, I think there were just situations where, you know, where you didn't want the red light to come on his be put on his helmet that when he's in the game, he's probably going to get the football kind of deal.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because you didn't want
the what's his name, Dree Archer situation.
Yeah, and look, I mean, it's obviously he's more than a, you know, a one trick pony, if you will. But the fact that they just didn't trust him enough in pass protection, I don't think, David. And he had what, 32 total touches, and you know, I think my hope was, you know, 15, 20 more than that he obviously didn't get, that obviously got injured towards the end of the year. I think the Jaguars game, I think they said, whoa, wait a minute here with him. So that's, you know, that, when you talk about James Conner and the offseason and looking ahead to next season, you just got to get more reliable in situations when he doesn't have the football in his hand. Now, when he had the football in his hand, especially to sort of those off guard, off tackle, around in runs, he was productive.
Yeah, he ran. No question, he ran hard and looked good doing it. And look, he's a smart guy, so I would expect him to understand the playbook and certainly have his head in there and be ready to go, assuming his knee comes around next year. Jesse James, the tight end again. The tight end situation was an interesting one. I threw out an over-under of 32, guessing that might be Jesse's number. We both went under. He ended up with 43. A solid season from Jesse James, as expected. I mean, Jesse James is what he is. My view is maybe, you know, we know what his deficiencies are. I just think Jesse gives you what he gives you as a you know, solid number two tight end in this league.
Yeah, I think about what you would kind of expect. I mean, he did have a good, you know, a better than average game or two in there as well. But the thing is, if Vance McDonald is healthy for all 16 games, does he come close to 43 catches?
I think no doubt. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, I think he does.
I don't think he does.
I think McDonald does.
Well, I think McDonald's
takes catches away from him.
Right, exactly. Now, and I think the next column that you have on a prediction was McDonald 32 catches, and I said under, but I expected that to be about 25 to 30 catches right around in there, which would obviously aid into Jesse James. So I think the only, you know, looking back at our predictions, with this, It was under the assumption that both those guys would have been healthy, and McDonald obviously wasn't. But, you know, I think kind of as expected overall with these two. Now, with that said, I think McDonald can make a huge difference in this playoffs, and especially against the Jaguars coming up. I think he's the kind of guy that you can pop on a pass up the seam, a la the way the Bills weren't able to do that against the Jaguars on Sunday there. So the thing is now when McDonald is, man, you know, how fragile is he? And do you want to keep him around? You know, is it worth trying to keep him around another year and while going out and maybe develop? Look, if you draft a guy like the Andrews kid out of Oklahoma, you know, if you get him at the bottom of the first round or something along those lines, you're going to get that guy in the field, right? So,
No doubt.
So are you going to want to carry that McDonald 3-point whatever salary on top of it? And Jesse James is obviously cheap right now, but Jesse James, you know, he is kind of what we have had him labeled all along, and that's, you know, more Matt Spaeth, I think, or, you know, and maybe not Matt Spaeth enough for our liking than Heath Miller, if you will. So going to be an interesting offseason here, a decision when it comes to McDonald and obviously the draft.
Yeah, tight end position in flux. It was from the beginning of camp. David Johnson signing a two-year deal, not sticking with the team. And, you know, getting McDonald at the very end of training camp. Look, it's not going to look like this next year. I think that's the one given. I said Grimble, 20 catches. You said under. You were right. I was wrong. I thought he might have more than that. Of course, only five. We've not seen any development from Xavier Grimble. And he's just kind of an extra body on the 53 who was dressing, you know, as kind of maybe the 53rd guy or, you know, Vance being hurt. So, you know, he's going to be a guy who has something, you know, it's going to be tough for him to be on the roster next year. Justin Hunter, I think you nailed it. I said 20 catches. thinking that might be high. You said something was wrong if he gets 20, meaning if he's on the field that much. Obviously, there are injuries or whatever. He finished with 4. Any chance Justin Hunter – he's not going to play this weekend, right? He's going to be down?
One would think, right? I mean – you mean he doesn't give you anything on special teams, and if AB's ready to go, I just don't see how you dress Hunter.
Okay, Juju, I said 25 catches. You said over. You went with 28. Obviously, Juju was the kind of, I would think, the he and Mike Hilton get the award as the biggest surprises offensively and defensively for the Steelers this season. We've cataloged what he's done. Fantastic. He put out – Juju's also got his social media game is A+. Did you see his highlight video, Dave? Did you see that one?
Yeah, that – boy, there's one kid now that understands how to build a brand early on in his career. It's him. Not only has he been – I wrote this the other day. Not only has he been entertaining to watch on the field, he's been entertaining to watch it off of as well. And you just have to look at how many years did it take Antonio Brown to develop his brand, even after he was
I'm not sure he even has a brand compared to Juju, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, AB obviously is now one of the most recognized.
Yeah, name recognition for sure.
Well, and I think face recognition as well, too. I think, several average Joe Blow NFL fans, you show a picture of them, they could, they could put the name with the face there. Juju is just, I mean, the only thing that how often do we see that? I'm not saying that Juju's going to fall into the trap here, but boy, stardom and all like that sure tends to have its effect on players and all. You know, you go back to some of those early interviews with AB and insert a name here of, I'm not going to change, I'm not going to do this. Money and fame and changes a person. You just hope that a guy like Juju, doesn't change. You just hope that he doesn't change. Now, obviously, these undercover trips out on Pittsburgh streets are going to have to end fairly soon because the kid's just going to get mobbed. He's becoming that recognizable there. It's been enjoyable to watch his rookie season. There's no other way to describe it. You just hope that he's able to stay, grounded, the way he is right now.
Yeah, he seems to have that in him, and he is obviously a much bigger name and persona in his rookie year than Antonio Brown was in his rookie year. And, the thing about Juju is he's shown all the things you want to see out of a receiver in his first year. Contested catches, ability to go over the middle, ability to outrun guys, which certainly is a surprise, surprised me. I think it surprised most people. Not that he wasn't fast, but that his football speed looks like he plays even faster than he measures. And, A+ for Juju's rookie season. This was pretty funny, Dave. Your responses.
Wait. One, I want to mop up one final thing on Juju. I think it took probably had the biggest eye-opening experience in the NFL, and I think that's just taking care of your body. Of what it takes to go into a 60-game season. We saw him miss that. Did the suspension set him back? Because remember he had that hamstring injury coming back that first practice. We was wondering if he was even going to play. He ultimately played through that hamstring injury, but he did have the hamstring injury before that as well, too. I think the biggest thing that maybe Juju learned this season about his rookie season is, boy, you got to have your body right. I think that's one of my biggest takeaways. Because go back even to training camp and all, David, he sure missed a lot of practices. Concussion, what was it? Ankle. Wasn't there a hammy mixed in there as well too? We was wondering if he was going to be Mr. Fragile during his rookie season.
Yeah, and we're speculating on a lot of stuff, and you just wonder, having a week off in the middle there with that suspension, you wonder if, keeps them fresh, all these things. We make up narratives around things that happen to offer suggestions, but A+ on Juju's rookie season, no doubt. DHB, this was funny. You nailed this thing the whole way along. I said 10 catches, and you said, I think you laughed and said under. Yeah, right. And I said 5 catches, and you said under. And I said 2 catches, and you said that's the number. And he finished with 2 catches. So DHB, you got it spot on. Of course, he had the end around for a touchdown or a reverse. Can't remember which it was here in the Cleveland game with that shoddy tackling by the Browns. But what are we putting the odds on today on DHB being back next year? Over under 25%?
Darius Hayward Arnez Battle Bay. Look, I didn't not earth shattering prediction on my end. I don't think there. You know, it comes a time, Dave, where the you know how effective is your your special teams will only carry you so far. It will only
you gotta find younger guys, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, look, the guy's great in the locker room, but do you need that with this wide receiving crew now? You know, it's gonna be tough. He's gonna need somebody like Danny Smith really pounding the table for him, Dave. And if they draft, if Eli's given a tender and re-signed, if they go to the draft and get a third or a fourth round guy that can take a top off the coverage, that can also play on special teams, it's going to be tough to. And look, I've liked DHB ever since they signed him, and he definitely had to reinvent himself during his time with the Colts there, and he did, and that allowed him to stay around the NFL a couple more seasons here. But there comes a time where, yeah, you got to cut the cord, and I think that might be this offseason.
Yeah, and not to make too much of it, but there are two receivers on the practice squad who've been around, and we'll see if they're contending for spots as well. Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, so I put him at the rough numbers that I put him at were 4,200, 32 TDs, 14 interceptions. Would he be sacked 20 times? Okay, so 4,200. Turns out that was pretty good. He was at 4,251. You had over on that. TDs, 32. I had over, you had over. You were at 35, 28 for him. We both nailed the interceptions, 14, 15. He ended up with 14. Sacked 20 times, and we both nailed that. He ended up being sacked 21 times. We were both at 21, 22. So generally, Ben had the numbers that we were pretty close to the numbers. He didn't play the last game that we expected on the season. Tale of two seasons, huh? Interesting to kind of catalog Ben's season in perspective, because it really is divided for me, first half, second half.
Boy, if he hits a couple of those first half long balls to Martavis, maybe we're talking about
the first one against the Bears. You're talking about one less loss. the opening play of the game.
Was that the Vikings?
The Bears, I think, that passed down the right sideline.
Yeah, it seemed like you had one against the Vikings, too, out of the slot that Ben should have hit as well, too. Definitely a tell of two halves. The five interceptions. Would either of us predicted that five of his interceptions would have come in one game? No. I don't think so. I thought he would have had a few more yards than what he had and maybe a few more touchdowns. But, I'll tell you this. He still has it.
No doubt. No doubt. Ben, some of the football he played in the second half was as good as he's played ever. You know, he just had some fantastic games. Obviously, you're not gonna have too many games like he did in the back-to-back Colts-Ravens games a few years ago with 12 touchdowns in 2 weeks. You know, those are special days or special weeks, but Ben's second half was excellent. And, you know, as critical as I was or we were of Ben in the first half, it's because he, you know, as most quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks in this league do, he's going to drive the Steelers' performance. And the offense, no question, underperformed. And he was a big part of that in the first half of the season. And the offense was what people expected it to be in the second half, largely because he was excellent. And that's, that's when Juju blossomed. And even with AB going down, the offense, put up big numbers. I think they averaged basically 30 points a game in the second half of the season.
Yeah. Look, man, and this is a guy that's got playoff experience too. So, can he beat the Patriots now?
Right. Okay, let's save the defense for Wednesday and talk a little bit about the playoff games. The Kansas City game, is there anything that is there? I mean, what do you say about a game like that?
You know, it the tide turned when Kelce went out. I thought, you know, props to Denver. Look, they scored. I thought the game was over early. I really did.
Me too. I actually missed some of the second half. I was not paying attention. It was 21-3, game over at home. No chance they lose that game.
And what one of the things I said, how the heck is Tennessee going to score? I think I said, how the heck is Tennessee going to score in that game? And I thought, how the heck is Buffalo going to score in that game? At 21-3, I thought at halftime, I thought, yeah, there's no way that they're going to come back to that. Now, props to you know, losing Kelce was huge. But look, the Chiefs dropped a few balls in that game in the first half as well too. And like I said, losing Kelce was huge, huge, huge. They kind of got away from how do you only give Kareem Hunt 11 carries in that game, you know? As well, especially when you had the lead that you did. But props to Dick LeBeau for shutting him down in the second half. And then, you know, Mariota did just a lot with his legs. He really did a lot with his legs. He had, like, what, 8 runs for 46 yards. And they over
caught a touchdown pass from himself.
Yeah, boy, that was Brad Johnson, the last guy to do that, is a member of the Minnesota Vikings, many 96, 97, somewhere around in there. So, hey, you know, like Hines Ward said, you got to take your hat off and hand it to the Titans. They persevered and overcame.
Any chance they can go to New England and win?
I don't see it, man. I just, you know, that's why you were hoping that Kansas City, I think if you're a Steelers fan, to win that game, because I think Kansas City was the only team that could give them. I tell you what, they you know, I don't know if DeMarco Murray's going to play or what, but I mean, Corey, you know, they don't have the ability, I don't think, to be able to stress that Patriots pass defense. When, by the way, that Patriots pass defense isn't the same Patriots pass defense in the first 8 or 9, 7, 6, 7, 8, 9 games of the season either. They've really come around. I don't see it, David, and it's understandable why the Patriots are 13.5 point favorites.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I'm with you. The Chiefs went up and did it in week one. I think they had the explosiveness offensively to do it, and unfortunately the Titans don't. The Titans are going to have to take the Bills type of approach and try to make it a, you know, see if you can get to halftime even and make it a shorter game and keep running the football like they did with Derrick Henry and come out with a win.
I tell you, there's one, you know, Tom Brady knows Dick LeBeau, and Dick LeBeau knows Tom Brady, right? So,
yep, good point.
You better not play zone. Do they have the ability to? We'll see how much Dick LeBeau learned from the Steelers a few weeks ago, because you better hold them to 21 to 22 points, the magic number with the Patriots that you got to hold them to, and. You know, because obviously, too, you know, if you let them score more than that, I mean, do you think the Titans can outscore them? And I think the answer is no there. So here's perhaps one thing to think ahead about, too, assuming the Steelers can beat the Jaguars, is Dick LeBeau is going to give you a good game plan to study, assuming that the Patriots and the Steelers square off again, right?
Oh, no doubt. He's gonna have tried some different things and wrinkles and we'll see how he tries to manage Gronk and everything else that he's got to do with that Patriots offense. So,
let me ask you this: where would it rank on Dick LeBeau all time wins if they're able to beat the Patriots and hold them to 21 points or under? I mean. It, because it's so improbable. I mean,
right. That on the list of surprises, you know, might be number one, right?
It might be. I mean, he's that's us using recency bias, I think, right?
But also using the 13.5-point line. I imagine he hadn't gone into many games where he was a 13.5-point dog in the playoffs.
Right, right. So more than anything, maybe he'll be able to teach the Steelers a thing or two.
So we've covered the other AFC game in full. Let's look at the NFC. You hit the nail on the head, called the Falcons upset. Chris Mortensen tweeted out during, you know, in the second half that, he shows that if you don't play your guys, it takes a while for the offense to get back in there, just like Steve Young has always said, because the Rams offense scored nothing in the first half and took a while to get going, having completely forgotten that just the game played prior was the Kansas City Chiefs, who rested all their starters and lo and behold put up 21 points in the first half and none in the second half. So I chuckled at that. Johnny Hecker was the best player on the field for the Rams in the first half, Dave. The Falcons get it done and now are a favorite going to Philly without Carson Wentz.
We didn't learn anything new about Sam. I mean, about our buddy, our pit boy, Donald, right?
Aaron Donald, right?
We didn't learn anything new about him. Man, that guy is just a robo machine.
Best player in football? He's in the conversation of the best players in football.
Good Lord! As far as defensive linemen go, he is absolutely. I mean, that's an understatement there. The Rams need another playmaker at the wide receiver position. They need them a Juju or a the kid Cooper Kupp, definitely a nice player. I think Tavon Austin didn't play much in that game, did he? Boy, you gonna keep him around at the number he's at he's at. They need another playmaker there for Goff.
Sammy Watkins, I think, is gone now. But, you know, he never lived up. It's tough to live up the billing of the number four pick. Sammy's a good player, but he's not an elite wide receiver.
I think what you got here was a team in the Rams that their offense surprised a lot of people during the regular season. You got a lot of tools to work with, but when you got to the playoffs, you could see that the playoff experience wasn't there. And not only the players, but the head coach as well, too. They're going to be fine, I think, David. And they definitely got the defense that unfortunately got, I think, Gal. My main argument when we talked about this game was the quarterback experience in this game is why I wanted to take the Falcons and Matt Ryan here. So I'm not surprised by the outcome, obviously, but I think the Rams obviously have a great future ahead of them as well. So I think it just came down to playoff experience and overall in this game.
Okay, so the Falcons go to Philadelphia, and then kind of the game I was really looking forward to seeing and turned out to be a pretty good one was the Saints and Carolina. The Saints' offense, to me, just feels unstoppable, and there's a chance they could play outside. Now, again, great matchup this week with the Vikings, maybe the most I think actually by far the most interesting game on the board of the four from a matchup perspective in Minnesota. They'll be playing in a dome again. The NFC, the teams could ride on good weather and domes. The only bad weather game here is Philly, and if the Falcons win, it's going to be domes the rest of the way, with Minnesota, New Orleans, Atlanta in domes, and the Super Bowl in a dome. So they've got kind of a different road than the Steelers are going to have in terms of weather conditions over the next couple weeks. Good on Carolina to make it a game, to keep in the game the whole way. It's just they missed an early field goal. They got behind a fair bit in the first. You know, they got behind 14-6 and never kind of found their whole way back. I thought it was a good game. I thought the better team won. I don't know that I have a lot of great insightful analysis.
The number one passing adjusted net yards per attempt team versus a defense that was, I think, second worst in defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt. I'm not surprised at the way this went. I think the only surprise was to me that the Panthers made a ball game of it late. And I mean, let's face it, they had a chance to win a ball game.
What was Funchess doing on that play, that throw in the end zone where he kind of jumped up and the ball was 2 feet to his left? Do you remember that play I'm talking about?
Yeah. Got to make a better effort there. At least maybe try to draw the penalty there. And look, you know, the Saints going for it on 4th-and-1. I love the decision. There would be a lot of people calling for Sean Payton's head today had the Panthers scored.
Mike Tomlin's head for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yep. I have to tell you, I was surprised. Particularly after they went out there, you know, took the timeout, tried to get him to jump, and didn't get him to jump, and then went out there again. I honestly was shocked.
I was not. I think I tweeted as much. I wasn't shocked. But here's the thing: why he got that offense, David? Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, Thomas. All that you can't get 1 yard to put the. I mean, you. That's why you do it. I'm trying to back up the reason why you do it. That's why you send those guys out there because.
Sure, you would think that. How about this? They didn't sniff it. I mean, that play was busted from the get go.
Yeah, that looked like it was a one read, and once it blew up, it was done. Hey, you got to hear it to Breeze at least trying to make a play that it resulted in the other team not thinking and intercepting the ball when he should have just volleyballed that one back to wherever, you know.
So. Absolutely, great point, and I was thinking that too. You wonder if Breeze is like, well, throw it to another guy and see if he catches it. I mean, that was a smart thing to do, and. There was a game earlier this season where it was actually a college game. Maybe it was a UT playing where a guy threw the ball out of bounds on a fourth down play. It's like, come, got to know your football circumstances. And we saw enough cases over the course of the bowl games and some of these plays where guys don't make smart football plays. And it's still, you know, one of the things, and I spent a lot of time with a guy this week talking about this offline, where football IQ is a really in organizations would be a really interesting thing to measure, and I'm not sure exactly how you would go about doing it, but it is incredibly significant. Just if you have smart players on the field who make good decisions most of the time, what an advantage you can have over the other team. And you're right, that was a good decision by Breeze to put it up there. Not a great decision by the defensive back, who I think realized it and then tried to kind of drop it, fumble, and ended up being kind of a fumble out of bounds when he realized he shouldn't have caught it. McCaffrey's touchdown, all that stuff. Is Cam Newton an elite player, Dave? Is he an elite quarterback?
I don't have a list in front of me, but I think you put him in the top 10, right?
Yeah, right on the border of the 10, I think, as well.
I mean, obviously can make some plays with his legs and all still as well, too. I think he's firmly in the top 10. It's just where do you want to put him from there. Now, obviously, as we said, joking going into these games, can you name the receivers? They traded away Kelvin Benjamin. They definitely need that. You want to talk about an area where they need to address during the offseason. And look, I am a huge McCaffrey fan, was going into the draft, this, that, and the other, but I think we know who he is now. He is more receiver than he is running back. He did not have a successful run rate this year, but he did catch a bazillion balls, and he can give you that in there as well. He's just probably not going to be the guy that carries the ball for you 20-25 times a game.
You know? Very interesting. Fournette goes 8, Fournette goes 4, McCaffrey goes 8 in the draft. They are polar opposite players. Le'Veon Bell is kind of a blend of the two. Fournette's run between the tackles and pounded out 25 times a game, and McCaffrey's receiver split wide out of the backfield and catch 90 balls for you and return punts. They are, you put them together, you get Le'Veon Bell. That's why Le'Veon Bell's so unique, right?
Right. And and here's the thing. I McCaffrey was one of 5 of the Pepsi Rookie of the Year nominees. And he was on that list. Look, say what you will about Lattimore and a defensive player. He deserves to be on that list. Okay, without a doubt. For a cornerback, for a rookie cornerback to do what he did this season, I know there's not many stats you can really track outside of interceptions with him and passes defense. Lattimore, he's not going to win it, but he deserved to be on that list. Kamara absolutely deserved to be on that list. Fournette, I think, absolutely deserved to be on that list. Hunt, even though I'm not a big fan of his rookie season overall, I thought, you know, at points he was a little bit overrated, I think he belongs on the list. How can you have those three running backs up for Rookie of the Year nomination and have McCaffrey on that list? I don't think you can. I posted over the weekend that, look, Juju has no chance of winning Rookie of the Year, but if it comes down to a choice between McCaffrey and Juju as far as being a nominee, I think Juju deserved to be on that list more than McCaffrey did, and that's, you know, that's all I'm gonna say. I'm not gonna sit here and bash McCaffrey, but I think Juju belonged on that list over McCaffrey.
Yeah, if you're redrafting, I'm not sure you take McCaffrey at 8. That's an awfully high pick in the draft, and we'll see if he develops into a more of a runner. The Carolina didn't run the ball all that effectively this year as a team, and there were some comments by Jordan Cameron, about the Matt Khalil at offensive line for the now also Richie Incognito, I guess, threw a couple racist remarks out in the game with the Bills. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. And you're talking about Cameron Jordan.
Jordan Cameron's a tight end. And
right. Richie Incognito's a POS, right? I mean, we've known that for a while, right?
Yep. So all right. So that sets up.
Let me just say real quick. New Orleans, I put this on Twitter yesterday. New Orleans is balanced enough that they can make a run at this thing.
I think New Orleans is the most dangerous team on that side.
They can definitely, and I think they match up well. And as you smartly pointed out, they're not going to have to play they have the potential to not play in any cold weather throughout the playoffs here. They're going to play in the dome against the Vikings. I think they match up reasonably well in that game against the Vikings. The Eagles, can Nick Foles do it against the Falcons? Look, if there's one thing about the Eagles saving grace in this game, it's their defense, okay? Is that going to be enough, though, against Julio and all? I think the thing the Eagles have going for them is the weather and their defense in this game. But we could very well see an NFC championship with the Saints versus the Falcons, and that would be at New Orleans, right?
Yes, we'll be at New Orleans.
Dad, well, you want to talk about a good game, to see, and you're talking about the chance of the only chance the NFC has to win the Super Bowl this year. At this point, if you ask me, comes down to an experienced quarterback in either Matt Ryan or Drew Brees. Period. And I think one of those two quarterbacks will get in this thing.
Yeah, I think the winner of the Saints Vikings game gets to the Super Bowls. True, that's my guess. Case Keenum's been really good all year long, and we'll see how he does in the playoffs. But they've got a balanced team that can do a lot of things. Yeah, they've got to remember they lost Dalvin Cook early in the season, but their running game hadn't missed a beat. But I'm with you on the Saints.
Okay. 5 seconds. One, as soon as I ask you the question, you have 5 seconds. Who is the Minnesota Vikings leading rusher? Go.
If you gave me three choices, I could tell you. The kid's name's escaping me.
Gotcha. Latavius Murray.
Yeah, Latavius Murray, and that's probably not who I would have guessed. Obviously, Murray was the guy they signed from the Raiders last year. And who's the other kid?
McKinnon.
I would have guessed McKinnon. Yeah, I couldn't think of his name.
Right. So
how about let's go back to All Pro? How about Adam Thielen making second team All Pro? There are only four receivers got votes, and obviously it was as you pointed out, Nuke ended up being first team. Julio only got 5 votes. As second, look, you only get to vote for 2 guys, so it's not, if you know your guys, it's not surprising. But I was a little surprised Thielen was the 4th guy, but well deserved. A little surprised.
Well, when you figure that Antonio Brown was on all 50 ballots, and you could only vote for two, Thielen deserved some votes in there. I think 91 catches, almost 1,300 yards, touchdowns. Obviously, you would think, would hope, would be a little bit higher, but stole some votes from Julio. I think that's understandable. There, you know, the thing that really, and look, All Pro will always be regarded much, much higher than Pro Bowl, but. There are some holes in the All-Pro voting process.
Sure.
Who the hell voted three votes for David DeCastro at left guard? And he
should lose their ballot.
He wasn't. There was like four, five, six players that got voted out of position this time around. Look, nobody.
Tackles. They had tackles on the wrong side. I mean, look, I guess. If your view is, okay, the two best tackles in football are two left tackles, but then, you know, the voting is left tackle and right tackle. I mean, it's, you know, this is, it's different. I'm with you. I think because sometimes we think cornerback and wide receiver is interchangeable, people think the line positions are interchangeable. I don't want to make it sound like playing left guard versus playing right guard is for a left guard's trying to break the Rosetta Stone to play right guard. It's not like that, but they're still playing different positions.
Now, I'm assuming that's what their ballot says, right? It's by side. I have never seen one of the ballots.
Which is why they know that.
Right. So that just, I mean,
the point might be if you think the two best guards are two right guards, you know, Zach Martin and David DeCastro or whatever you think it is, then, you know, maybe that's your way of making a statement. I don't know, but it does seem odd.
Yeah, and look, nobody knows how hard it is than I do than trying to cover 32 teams, you know, and be able to talk about all 32 teams throughout a season, know who plays what. But come on, there is a hole in the system there for sure. You got people voting three votes for David DeCastro at left guard. Cameron Hayward, well deserving of his first Pro Bowl. I mean, his first All Pro team. Boswell, you know, obviously was beaten out. He got a nice sizable amount of votes. Marquise Pouncey got a handful at center. Mike Hilton got one vote as a defensive back.
Yeah, I figured that had to be somebody in Pittsburgh in Houston who saw his three sacks. I think a local guy had to say, okay, slot corner, I'm going to give Mike Hilton a nod.
Do you think that was Will Graves, maybe? Is he a voter? Is he...
I don't know. They're 50. I never saw Will say he was a voter. I mean, I know the AP has 50 voters. Is it 50 AP people who vote?
I don't know if it's 50 AP or not. I just know.
That didn't cross my mind. I didn't think it was 50 AP. So I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that either, but that got underneath my skin when I was going through the vote tallies from All Pro. Okay, what did we miss a game that we didn't talk about? We talked about all those playoff games.
Yeah, I've got them all. Well, by the way, I haven't seen the line on the Vikes New Orleans game. Is that a cut 2 points for the Vikings or what is it?
What was it this morning? It was, I mean, the Falcons were the only road team favorite, I think. Minnesota opened 3.5 point. Home favorite, and that line's moved to 4.
A little bit surprising to me. I will be on the Saints. Dogs went 4-0. Underdogs, obviously, some people didn't understand this on Twitter. It blew my mind. Underdogs cover all four games in round one of the NFL playoffs. So it was a dog day. It was dog weekend. If you were on that.
National championship game tonight. Who do you like? What the line opened at? I think 4.5. I think it's going to settle probably right around 4.
Yeah, I'll take Bama. The over under is awfully low in this game. It's 45, so people expecting a kind of grinded out SEC game. But yeah, I'll take the give me the Tide.
boy, this is a tough one, right? I mean, Jalen Hurt. I don't know. Give me Georgia. Give me Georgia for the upset, David. Give me Georgia for the upset here. I don't know why.
I won't be unhappy to see Georgia win.
Yeah, I won't either. And I think a lot of people may be listening to this podcast as well. All right, we'll try to get us a beat writer in here for Wednesday, talk more about Jaguars, Steelers. We're going to have a lot of content coming up in these coming days on SteelersDepot.com as well, too, helping you preview that game. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers. Give a shout-out to the guy that put that list together for us, Dave.
Yeah, it was to make sure I get it right, I think it was Matt Edwards, but let me just go ahead. Give your spiel.
Mark Edwards.
Mark Edwards. Sorry, Mark Edwards. Yeah, Edwards. Appreciate Mark asking and putting together the numbers, and we'll do the defensive side of our predictions on Wednesday.
All right. Follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. And until Wednesday, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.